We're looking at the Mishnah now on Daf Samach Omen Aleph. Hasholeach es ha-be'era v'ochla eitzim o avonim o ofar chayav. So a person lights a fire, and instead of watching and guarding the fire, he was negligent, and the fire spread, and it consumed somebody's wood, or his stones, or even offar. Offar, I think, is what's called near. Near means what they used to do is when they plowed the field, sometimes they would leave, instead of immediately planting, they would leave the open crevices of the karka that was formed by the furrows formed by the plow, they would leave them exposed. And in that way, the water came down from the heavens and would saturate and penetrate into these crevices, and that was very good to replenish the minerals of the land. So that was called nir. The Gemara tells us in Baba Basra that if a person wants to make a chazaka, he has to exploit the land for 3 years as if he owned the land. And what if he takes a year off and leaves it nir, opened? And the Gemara seems to assume that that's normal procedure, so that's acceptable. Here what happened is, while he left it near, somebody's fire came and started singeing the ground. Now normally, when you talk about fire, you think fire burns wood, and that's one of the cases that he has here. But now he has two sort of unusual cases, you know, of singeing stones or scorching the ground. And even for that he's chayav. Which is interesting because, as a general rule in Nezikin, you know, we always say that Yechayah for something that we anticipate is normal to happen. But, for example, when an animal eats, it doesn't usually eat utensils. I mean, there are children's books that we read to the kids, you know, of an ostrich eating a bugle or something, you know, in a circus. But, normally speaking, you're not chayah for such a thing. It's unusual. And the normal anticipated damage of a fire is to wood, which is a flammable substance, not to stones. But nevertheless, he's chayav for everything. That's the chiddush of the Mishnah for Eish. And the Gemara, the Mishnah actually quotes a pasuk to prove the shenema ki teitze Eish u'motza kotzim v'nechal gadish o hakama o hasadeh. So interesting that the Torah went out of its way to really enumerate all the types of damages that this Eish incurred, including a list of kotzim, which are more wood kind of, twigs or thorns, you know, they're dried up and they're very flammable. And gadish is a stack or a bale of whatever, it's grains or hay or whatever it might be. O hakama. Oh, hasada, and it could be the sada is a reference to the actual stones that you put down in a field, or the ground of the field. And shalom yishalom amavres habeira. The Torah says in all these cases you pay. So immediately the Gemara is going to raise the question: why did the Torah have to enumerate all these four cases? Amar Rava lomeli de kasav rachmana. Why did the Torah feel compelled to tell us that Yechayah for Eish on Kotzim, on Gadish, on Kama, and on Soda, four different cases? Tzrichi, we need all four. The Ikas of Rachmana, Kotzim, if the Torah would just specify that Yechayah for burning Kotzim, these thorns, Havamin, I would have thought, Kotzim hu dechayev Rachmana. Yechayah for Kotzim specifically. Why? Mishum deshchiche eish gabayu. Usually kotzim get burnt by fire. Ushchichi de pasha, but yet it's an inexpensive substance that has very limited market value, so people are not very careful about it. And the Torah wants to say that just any time that fire burns up these kotzim, it's because the owner of the fire was careless about it. So that's usually what happens. So again, there's reason to say that he's chayav here because he was careless in his shmirah. He should have been more careful. And as a result of his negligence, somebody's kotzim were burnt down. And that's something that we could we could really anticipate, because kotzim is very shchiach, eish, kabayu, it's very flammable. That's what an eish is looking for, kotzim. Aval gadish, but in the case of this bale of barley or kernels of wheat, whatever it is that's gathered together in a gadish, lo shchiach eish kabayu, that's not normally what goes up in smoke. Below shchiach the pasha, people are much more careful about guarding their fire in order that it shouldn't burn down a haystack or a stack of wheat. I mean, that's very expensive commodities that you sell on the market. You know, a farmer will harvest his wheat and then he creates a gadish out of it. You know, he takes all the wheat and packs it together in bundles and markets it. You know, the last thing he wants to do is have it go up in smoke. So people are generally very careful about watching a fire in such a way that it shouldn't burn a gadish. Is aim or low? I might say that in this case, probably what happened was circumstances beyond his control. There was no reason for him to be careless about burning up somebody's gadish. He probably was very careful about that. And yet the fire, through some extreme, you know, extenuating circumstances, got out of control and it burned down someone's gadish. So the Torah says, Yechayev even for gadish. Notice, we're going to assume that if you burnt down someone's gadish because your fire spread, it must be because you were negligent. You failed to provide the shmira and the protection that would have prevented such a mishap, and therefore you're liable. So that's the chiddush of gadish. Because of Rachmana Gadish, had the Torah said Gadish and left out Kotzim, because L'chora now the question is, well, if the Chiddush is that you're even Chai for Gadish, so don't even bother telling me about Kotzim, just tell me Gadish and I'll derive Kotzim. Half Amina, I would have said Gadish Chai of Rachmana. Dafka, in the case of Gadish, where you cause someone a tremendous loss, then the Torah says the Nizak, the damaged party, has a right to sue you and collect damages. Mishum Dehefsim Merubahu. The loss, the hefsid, was very significant. Aval kotzim, gee, you know, how much do you get for selling weeds on the market? I don't mean weeds that you smoke. Mm. Yeah. Those are quite expensive. But what I mean by weeds are, you know, dried weeds, which people, I guess, use as firewood if they're really desperate, but it's not a great commodity with, you know, to... You know, if you were a merchant in weeds, you know, selling weeds on the market, I don't know how much you would be making. You know, you'd probably have to take on an extra job working in Tel Aviv or something, you know, from 8 in the morning till 8 at night or something. Hefsed muot, aim alone. Maybe the Torah didn't even bother, you know, saying that you have to pay for such a loss. It's interesting. The Havmina here seems to suggest that the liability is a function, is commensurate to the loss, meaning the greater the loss, the more the Torah is interested in imposing a penalty and a liability for the damager to pay for damages. In the case of kotzim, one could certainly have entertained the idea that since kotzim is so insignificant, maybe the Torah didn't even bother imposing a chiyuv of nezikin on that. And in fact, the Gemara earlier had a havamina that in a certain case of a tree that's kind of inexpensive, maybe the Torah didn't even require that you pay for such a damage.
It's like the case, I guess, it's like if you burn someone's garbage,
right?
Like, do you care?
Nobody cares. But like, right.
But now, you still burn the. But it seems that you are chayev because. Right. It's not yours to burn. It's somebody else's.
The Torah says that if it's worth something, then the Nizak has the right to claim damages.
I mean, what's the threshold? Is it like Shavu Pruta or is it...
Right, Shavu Pruta. Right. Less than Shavu Pruta, we assume there's Mechila, and the person doesn't collect. Now, what would be if I sued you for something that's worth less than a Pruta, say that I wasn't Mochil, I'm so poor, I need even that. Usually we assume that that's below the standard of mammon. As the Torah, as a legal system, sets a minimum standard of mammon, and something that's worth a prut on the market it fulfills that basic requirement and has a shame mammon to it, and therefore I can force you to pay in Bezdin for my loss of a pruta. But if it's less than a pruta, is butler daita sokol adam, even though he's yelling and screaming about half a pruta, but the halacha doesn't take that into consideration.
even if it's a sentimental value?
That I don't know. That's a very interesting question. Can something be subjective, but, you know, valuable subjectively, but not on the objective market? And that's something that we really have to learn through Nezikin well. So far, we're up to page 60, and I don't remember, again, I may have forgotten, that the Gemara actually addressed this question head on. But the assumption would be that, at this point, until I know otherwise, that value is objective. You know, there are legal standards for value.
Right.
So I could be very much attached to a certain piece of paper that has no market value, you know, because...
it was autographed of some famous person.
Well, by my great-grandmother, you know, but I don't know if I could sue for damages in that case.
Right. I mean, it often comes up also with antiques, say, that if it's a salt and pepper shaker and they're very, very special, and together they're worth a lot of money, but if one breaks, the one by itself doesn't, it's not like it's half now. Together it was more than what it is as a one.
Right, excellent. Okay. That's also going to be an issue. So far, where are we holding? We justified the parsha of Eish vis-a-vis both the case of Kotzim and the case of Gadish. And now the Gemara says, Kama Lomali. Why did the Torah have to specify Kama? And the answer is, Ma Kama Begolui. Here the Chiddush is not that Yechayah for Kama. That we would certainly know about it, because Kama are stalks that are growing in the field. But rather, the purpose of Kama is to exclude something from the Chiyuv of Eish. So far, we haven't excluded anything. We've said that anything is Chayuv in Eish. But here, Kama is telling me Golui. Only Tfuah, which is growing in the ground and is exposed, it's not concealed, is then Yechayuv Af Kol Begolui, or anything else that is Golui and is similar to Kama, Yechayuv for. But if the fire burnt something that's Tomun, which means it's concealed, it's covered over, then you're potter. So imagine if you have this great giant covering over Kalim, and the fire spreads and burns the Kalim. The Nizak has no recourse to collect damages for the Kalim because they are Tamun, they're not like Kama. Now the Gemara is not happy with that according to Rabbi Yehuda, because later on we're going to have the Shita Rabbi Yehuda. She's of the opinion that even for things that are concealed, the Bala Eish is liable to pay damages. Is Kama Lamali? What's Rabbi Yehuda going to do with the word Kama? And now the Gemara is going to have a whole back and forth about the word Kama and what the word Kama could teach us. Lamali, the Gemara says, L'rabos kol bale Kama. What it means is that anything that's alive, anything that grows, anything that's a tall, so to speak, vegetation, which includes all Balei Chaim and all Ilanos, all trees, they're all included under Kama. So we're deriving from Kama, Balei Kama, like Kama equals Kama, which means things that stand up, like animals that stand on four legs, or trees that stand up erect in the field. And if any of those are destroyed by fire, then the damaged party has a right to collect compensation. Now, the Gemara doesn't bother explaining why we would think that you're not chayev in these cases. What was the havamina that Rabbi Yehuda has to use the word koma in order to include this? So we have here a Tosfos, Divra Maska L'Rabos, which is towards the bottom of the page. And based on this Tosfos, we want to say the following, that the Ribuy of Ilonos is, even though it's attached to the Karka, meaning Gadish is a reference to things that grow in the karka, but after they were cut off, and they were harvested, then you formed them into bundles, into bales, I guess you could say. And kotzim, likewise, are pieces of flammable wood that were cut off from the ground. That's called tolush. In the case of koma, we're talking about mechubar, something that's attached to the karka. And for that, we need a special ribui, that not only are you chayev for gadish, which is tolush, you're also chayev for ilonos, which are attached to the ground. But frankly speaking, that's not enough, because that doesn't really explain why I need a pasuk for animals. And I think the answer to that is that in the case of an animal, the damager, which means the bala esh, has a right to claim, but why didn't the animal run away? In other words, an animal maybe doesn't have the same intelligence level as a human being, but he certainly has a natural fear of crisis and anything that jeopardizes his life. The animals protect themselves. They have a natural instinct of self-perception, of self-protection. And this leads us to a discussion about something called kafus. Kafus means when the animal was tied down. You know, very often you have an animal that roams around, and in order to make sure that the animal doesn't get lost, you tie it down. You know, you bind its feet. In such a case, you'd be chai for eish. But I'm not sure if you'd be chai for eish in the case of bal chai that's not kafus. The owner of the eish, the mazik, has a right to say to the nizak, well, why didn't your animal run away? The animal in itself, in a certain sense, destroyed itself. But all these fine points are included under the word kama. And now the Gemara is going to ask, well, Rabbanan, the Rabbanan used the word kama to exclude tamud. You're not chayev for something that's concealed. Is the rabbos kol bali kol minolahu? So where do they have a source to expand to all those cases of animals, of trees that are mechubar, that are connected to the ground? And the Gemara answers, nafka lahu mi o hakoma. If you go back to the pasuk in the parasha, it says, O hakoma. It says, let me read the pasuk to you. It says, ki teitzei eishu mitzah kotzim v'nechal godish o hakoma. And the word O, classically, is used as a ribui all over the place. Here, it's coming to be marbe bali koma. So now we have to turn the tide, you know, turn the table on to Rabbi Yehuda. Why does he need koma to include bali koma? What does he do with the word O? And he says, mi boile lechalik. In other words, had the Torah not added the word O, and it just gave you this list without the O, right, then you would have read it, oh, you know, when you chayev, ki nechal motzakotzim, v'nechal godish, v'koma, v'soda, you're only chayev if it burns all these different items. Each one represents a different category. I need the O l'chalek to teach me that you chayev for any one of the above. Not all of the above, but any of the above. Meaning you chayev for kotzim, you chayev for godish, you chayev for koma, you chayev for godish, for soda, any of the above. That's called O L'chalik. So the Gemara asks now the obvious question, Rabbanan L'chalik minolahu. Where are the Rabbanan going to derive L'chalik? Because they need the O for Balikoma. Nafka lahu mi O hasodeh. The Torah didn't have to give us two times O. Right? The Pasuk says O hakoma O hasodeh. Could have just said O hakoma ve'asodeh. Why do you have to say again O? So the extra O is coming to teach us L'chalek, whereas Rabbi Yehuda used the first O for L'chalek, is Rabbi Yehuda, I did the kos of Rachmana O HaKoma, kos of O HaSodeh. It's kind of like a symmetry. You know, the Torah is also a book of literature. You know, it has to be beautiful in the way it presents, you know, the words and the phrases. So the first O is necessary, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to teach me L'chalek. The second O doesn't teach me any halakhic conclusions. It's rather there to maintain the symmetry between O hakoma and O hasodeh. Good. So now we've justified kotzim, we've justified godish, and we've justified koma. But we have one left on the list, O hasodeh. So the Gemara asks, sodeh lomali. Why did the Torah have to add the word sodeh? And the Gemara answers, La Suye, to come to include, Lichacha Nero, Notice he scorched this near. You remember, near was after the Harisha when he hasn't yet planted yet. He left it open. And now the fire came and scorched this near. And that's going to cause tremendous damages. The sichicha avonov, or he singed the stones. And as a result, these stones were damaged. Chayav. He's going to have to pay damages for that. And here we have a discussion of Rashi, but not here on our daf, but back on daf Vav Amud Aleph. And Rashi there says that in all Avos Nezikin, like Shor and Bar, you only chayav on Hezek for a Dover Haroi. Now, as we could already anticipate that that's going to be damaged. Like, for example, the case of Shane, we assume he's going to eat food. He's not going to eat kelim, utensils, or ksus, which are garments. And therefore, you're not chayav in those cases. Every one of the mazikin is chayav for something that's a dovar haroi. But here in the case of Eish, the Torah was machadesh, that you're chayav not only for dovar haroi, which would be Gadish and Kotzim, but rather Yechayv even for Dovar She'eno Roy Law, like for example Avonim and Ofar, because in the cases of Avonim and Ofar, the object is not consumed. It's scorched and it's singed, but it's not consumed. Nevertheless, the Torah says Yechayv. The Gemara says now, V'lichtov Rachmana Soda V'lo Boy Hanoch. I mean, if the Torah would have said that you're even chayef for Soda, which is a Dovr Sheino Roy, then I certainly would have derived the conclusion that you're chayef for Kotzim, Godish, and Koma. Gemara answers Tricha, Dikas Rachmana Soda. If the Torah had only mentioned Soda, Hava, I mean, I would have thought, Ma Sheba Soda. Only, you're only chayef for that which grows in a field, which is Tvua, which is grains. In, for that you're chayef. But Midi Achrini, Lo. All the kinds of objects that were destroyed by the fire, you're not chayev for kamash. Well, on the Torah wants to tell us with the word kama that you're chayev for tvua. And Soda tells me that you're chayev even for Evan and Nir. So that each one is coming to teach me a chiddush, which I wouldn't have known had the Torah only limited itself to Soda. Nir and Avonim are not part of the Soda, because the Soda refers to something like the Koma in the Soda. Now, from this point on, pretty much till the end, we have an Agadita. So, you know, it's a little change of pace to learn Agadita, and that's what we want to do. The first Agadita here is a little bit harsh, a little bit difficult to swallow about evil and punishment, so be ready for that. Brace yourself.
Okay.
Omer Rav Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Omer Rav Yonason, Ein Puranus Bal Yolam. When Hashem issues an evil decree to bring Chas V'Shalom destruction upon the world, that won't happen. El Bizman Sharashoyim Ba'olam. That's only because there are evil people in the world. But, and here's the punchline, V'Eina Mascheles El Min HaTzadikim Tchila. When Hashem starts meeting out punishment, the first on the line to get it are going to be the tzaddikim. This reminds me a little bit of the Holocaust, because very often, you know, the Nazis, Yimach Shemom, would take out the, you know, the rebbes and the scholars to be killed first. Shenemar. And here's the, you know, the overlap between this Agadita, or the interface between this Agadita and our Gemara of Eish. The Gemara is actually going to darshan this, Shivim Parim LaTorah, obviously, Al Pi Derech HaDrush, from the Parsha of Eish. What does it say in the Parsha of Eish? Ki Teitze Eish U'mitzah Kotzim. Aha. So first of all, we have Kotzim. Kotzim represent the lowest of the low. Remember how we said before, it's a cheap, you know, different thorns and so on, that's hardly marketable. And Amosai Eish, when does HaKadosh Baruch Hu send out his wrath, his fire of punishment? Is Dafka Amosai Eish Yotza Bizman She Kotzim, when there are Rishoyim, which are symbolically represented by the Kotzim, Mitzuyim La, they are found. That's when the Eish comes out. But the Eina Maschelus element at Tzadikim Tchila, but the first ones to get it are the Tzadikim. They're first on line for this evil decree from above. Shenemar v'nechal Gadish. The word Gadish is a metaphorical or an allusion to the Tzadikim. Because a Gadish is something that gives us fruit. It's like a produce. And Tzadikim are those who produce. And that's what it says, V'ochal Gadish lo nemar el v'nechal Gadish. What's the difference between the active verb V'ochal, in the case of Gadish, and the causative or reflexive V'nechal, it was eaten, in this case of Gadish. She'nechal Gadish kvar. You know, when you say ochel, you're talking about the present. When you say nechal, it means it already was eaten in the past. And what it means is nechal gadish kvar, already the gadish in the past was devoured, was consumed, even before the kotzim. So again, the Torah says ki teitzei eishu matza kotzim, and the Torah says v'nechal gadish. And the v'nechal gadish indicates that the gadish was already eaten, was consumed before the kotzim. The gadish represents the tzaddikim, and Hashem is now punishing the tzaddikim, and then the kotzim, then the rishayim. And now the Gemara is going to bring another agadic statement about how the midas hadin, the justice, and the punishment is meted out first and foremost to the tzaddikim. Tani, Rav Yosef brought a brisa. Maidich siv, this is in Makas Bechoros. You remember that on that night of Tesvav ben Nisan, the Bechoros were destroyed. And the Malach HaMavis was coming around from house to house to take the Bechor in each family. And Hashem warned the people, V'atem lo teitzu ish mi Pesach beso ad boker. And this is in Shmos Yud Beis. No single Jew should leave the entryway to his house or the door of his house until the morning, because what's going on tonight? The Mashkis is running around killing the Bechoros. And here the Brisa says, we derive a conclusion, a principle. Kevon shenitan reshus l'mashkis. Once Hashem gave the green light and the permission for the Mashkis, that's the Satan or the Malach HaMavis, to destroy, to mete out his decree. Eino mavchin bein tzadikim v'rishayim. He takes even those who are tzaddikim together with the rishayim. So therefore, stay in your house, avoid exposure to the danger on the outside where the mashkis is running. He's reigning supreme. He has the full control. He's got the green light. Now, keep in mind that on the Pesach HaBatim, they had placed the dam of the Korban Pesach on the mashkov, and that was a way of warding off, so to speak, the mashkis, that he wouldn't go into the Jewish homes. So you need that sign on the doorpost. V'lo od, and furthermore, elish ha'maschil min ha'tzadikim t'chila. Not only does the mashkis have the permission to take with him the lives of the tzadikim, but he has the permission to take the lives of the tzadikim first. Shenemar, this is based on a pasuk in Yechezkel, v'hichrati mimech, I will destroy from you, tzadik v'rasha. Starts with a tzadik, and then it goes to a rasha. Is Bachi Rav Yosef. When Rav Yosef learned about this principle, he started weeping. He broke out in tears. Kule hai nami li ayin domim. How could it be that the tzaddikim are considered like ayin, like naught, like hevel? How could it be that tzaddikim are first on line to be punished? Aren't they chashuv? Don't they have a certain significance and status in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam? Amalei Abaye Tivusahu L'Gabaye. We could have anticipated the response. What we think is evil is really good. Chayev Adam Levarech Ala Ra Kishem Shuvarech Ala Tova Tivusahu L'Gabaye. It's good. It's beneficial for the tzaddikim to have to be taken first. Why Dechsiv? Based on a pasuk in Yeshaya, Ki Mipnei Hara'a Nesaf Hatzad. In other words, the tzaddik will be taken away so that he doesn't have to witness all the evil in the world. The Gemara has another derivation from the Pasuk in Makas Bechoros, which tells us to stay within the house and not go out in the streets. Om Rav Yudah Mar Rav. And here we're turning to Daf Samach Omid Beis. Li Olam Yikones Adam. When a person enters into the city, let's say he's a traveler or he's a sojourner, he should enter into the city Bechitov. Bechitov means when the sun is on the horizon, when there's the light of day. And when he leaves the city, he should also leave by day. I was always wondering if that applies to international flights. Imagine, you know, El Al flies to New York at 11 in the morning or at 12 midnight. Should I advocate taking the morning flight? A lot of people prefer the night flight. So I don't know. It could be that we're talking about a person who is alone. And if he's alone, he's very vulnerable to the, you know, to the mashchisim that are out there. But if a person is traveling on a plane, which is a public place in a sense, because there are hundreds of people together with you on the plane, he doesn't have to worry about this halacha. But from whence do we derive that a person should come into a city during the day and leave the city during the day? Shenemar v'atem lo seitzu ish mi pesach beisad aboker. The best time is boker. That's the time where a person can be protected from all sorts of attacks from mazikim, attacks from listim. Maybe today, Chas V'Shalom, you can talk about being attacked in, you know, different types of attacks, like terrorist attacks, Chas V'Shalom, or crashes and different accidents of sorts. Nighttime is much more dangerous. Tosis Dibra Maskali Olam quotes Rabbeinu Tam that we're talking about entering and leaving a city that he's not familiar with. If it's his own city, in other words, this is his local, you know, habitat, then he doesn't have to be makpid with all these dinim and worry about the nightfall, you know, where he might go to the wrong place or fall into a ditch. He knows the city very well. And that's why it says here, Knisa le'ir first, and then Yitzia mimena. Right? Yikones Adam, and then Yetze Adam. Because if we were talking about his own city, then first it would have said, he exits the city, and then he returns and comes back. But rather, the Gemara is talking about someone's, another city, a person who's unfamiliar with that city. And therefore, at night, danger lurks in the shadows, in the darkness, and he has to be very careful. That's not a good time to go out into the streets. Stay in his hotel, stay in his, you know, lodging, wherever, whoever's hosting him, and wait until the morning to leave. The Gemara Pesachim tells us that Zrizim Makdimim L'mitzvahs, that when a person should be a Zariz, with a great deal of zealousness and alacrity, should go out to do the mitzvah at his first, earliest possible opportunity, but not until the morning. And that's why Avraham Avinu, even though he had nightly vision to go to the Akedah, but it still says Vayashkem Avraham Baboker, meaning Zrizim Akdim Lemitzvahs, but only Baboker, not to go out at night. And Avraham Avinu understood that he should not go out at night based on this drasha, this principle of Yetze Bechitov. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a Braisa. And this Braisa is a continuation of our discussion before about not leaving your house at a moment of danger when the mashkis is out there lurking in the streets. And it says, Dever Be'ir, if there's a plague in the city, Kanes Raglecha, you should gather in your feet, meaning close yourself off in your house and don't go out. Shenemar v'atem lo seitzu ish mi pesach beso ad boker. When there's a magefa out there, the mashkis is reigning supreme, he has a free hand, stay indoors. V'omer. Now, whenever you see a brisa quoting a second pasuk, you know that the Gemara is going to analyze why the brisa felt compelled to bring a second pasuk. Lech ami bo b'chadorkecha usgard lo secha ba'adecha. My nation, you should go into your homes, into your rooms, your inner chambers, and lock the doors behind you. And why? Because the pasuk says, "Chavi kimat rega ad yavor zam," until after the period of anger will pass. The omer, and the pasuk says, "Michutz tishakel cherev umichadorim ema." Outside, bachutz, that's where the cherev, the sword, will destroy. Malach HaMavis is out there with his sword. In the chadorim, inside the confines of one's house, the privacy of one's inner chamber, there it's ema, there certainly is fear, but it's not teshakel cherev. It's not the same level of danger. Now the Gemara is going to analyze, why do we need three psukim to teach me the same single principle? My vi omer. First, we want to understand, why isn't it sufficient to quote the pasuk in Chumash, in Makas Bechoros Vatem lo seitzu ish mi pesach peso ad boker? The chitema, because one could have argued, don't derive a universal conclusion from Lel Makas Bechoros, because hani mili belaylo avol biyumam lo. The pasuk is only telling us, at night you should stay within the confines of your house, lock yourself up in your house, but it doesn't say anything about during the day, because Makas Bechoros was at night. Toshma, for that we need the second pasuk from Yeshayahu Anavi, and there the pasuk says, Lech ami bo b'chadarechu skod lasecha. And this pasuk is coming to tell you to lock yourself up in your house even by day. And v'chi teimu, I still am not satisfied, because maybe I could argue, hani mili hecha deleka ema migavoi. That's only if there's no fear of danger within the house. Aval hecha de'ika ema begavoi, in a situations where there's fear in the house, like for example, if there's dever, you know, a plague on the outside, the plague is going to affect people even inside. Is ki nafik yosef bede inshi besavta bi alma tfei ma'ale. And therefore, you might say that, you know what, it's better to go out of the house where I can mingle with the public and I'll have company, rather than stay alone in the house where I'm overwhelmed by fear. Tashma, that's why I have the third pasuk, which is coming from Chumash Dvarim, and there it says, Michutz tishakel, tishakel cherev, u'michadorim emo. In other words, even though chadorim is emo, there's fear inside the house, afal gav, d'michadorim emo, nevertheless, michutz tishakel cherev. It's less dangerous on the inside. It's more dangerous on the outside. That's where the Malach HaMavis is running around with his cherev. And therefore the best thing is to lock yourself up inside your house. And the main proof here is from the fact that in the chutz it says the word cherev. Cherev means definite death. You know, if you face an adversary who's got a cherev and you're not armed to protect yourself, that's it, kaput. But in the chadorim, inside your house, it's only ema. But there's no definite death. You know, in the case of the Holocaust, you know, even to stay within the confines of your house when the Nazis were doing a roundup was not the safest thing. Because the Nazis would break into homes and round up the Jews. And therefore the Jews had to find other means of escape. And that was very dangerous. And it was almost very rare to find such a thing. Because if you're on the outside, they're going to round you up. If you're on the inside, they're going to come and break into your house. It was the most horrible klola, perhaps, in all of Jewish history. The Gemara goes on to tell us a story. Rava himself, be'idon rischa, when he knew that there was a magefa of dever, there was anger, you know, divine anger, havi sochar kave, he would close the windows. Tichsiv, based on a pasuk in Yirmiyah, a very famous pasuk which we read on Tisha B'Av, ki ola mavis b'chaloneinu, because death has come knocking on our windows. And therefore, if we close and lock our windows, Rava said, there's a hope that we'll be able to keep out the Malach HaMavis from coming in. Now, at the end of this pasuk, the pasuk says, "Ba bi'arman osenu." That means it already came into the Armon. The Armon is the inside of one's house. That's the ultimate curse of Yirmiyah. And that's a pasuk you could read and study even on Tisha B'Av. These are the Dvarim HaRoyim Shel Yirmiyah. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a braisa regarding the time of famine. Ra'av Ba'ir, if there's famine out in the city, Pazer Aglecha. Don't stay confined within your house. You're going to die of starvation. Go out and seek mazon, some sort of source of sustenance. Otherwise, you're going to die if you remain frozen in your house. Shenemah, the pasuk says in Bereishis Yudbeis, this at the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, it says, Vayehi ra'av ba'aretz, Vayered Avram Mitzrayim alagur sham. When there was a famine in the land, Avram didn't remain passively locked up inside his house, but rather he left, he went down to Mitzrayim. So we see that Avram Avinu teaches us what to do, how to respond to the case of Ra'av, of a famine. The Omer, and again we're going to have to ask why the Braisa needs another pasuk, another source, and this is from Malachim Beis, and that's the case of the four Mitzrayim, if you remember. They were sitting outside of the Machna because a Mitzorah has to be quarantined outside of the camp. And they turned one to the other and they said, Imamarnu Navo Ha'ir, V'Hara'av Ba'ir V'Maslu Sham. If we go into the city, then we're going to die of starvation. In other words, we have to do whatever we can do because of this ra'av. And what they did was, if you remember, they threw themselves into the Machna Aram. Now Aram was the arch enemy of the Jewish people, the Assyrians, and the chances were they would be put to death by the Assyrians, but you have to take whatever action you possibly can out of desperation. You can't just sit around doing nothing and die from starvation. Maivi Omer, why do we need the second pasuk? We already have the pasuk from Avram. Avinu v'chitem, you might have argued, Hani mili, when does this halach apply that you have to leave your house to seek out food? Hecha deleka safek nefashos. If it would not be a matter of exposing yourself to danger on the outside, aval hecha deika safek nefashos, maybe in a case where going out into the open public area would be an exposure to a dangerous situation, lo, he should better remain in his house. Toshma, that's what we learned for the four Mitzorayim. Look at the action they took. They declared, Lechu v'niplal machna Aram. Let's throw ourselves into the camp of Aram, our arch enemy. V'yam yechayunu nichya. If they let us live, they'll let us live. So you see that even in a mokum sakana, in order to try to seek out food, in a famine danger zone, they had to leave and take action, even if it meant exposing themselves to danger. To stay put in a passive situation would be vadai misa. They would definitely die of starvation. Now, these four mitzorayim were not necessarily the great tzaddikim. You know, a mitzorah is usually a sinner of some sort, but nevertheless, their thought process and their actions are recorded in Tanakh for all eternity, and the Gemara feels that we're supposed to derive conclusions about how to live our lives and how to avoid danger and save ourselves from these Arba Mitzorayim. You know, those who speak in a positive way about Yom HaTzma'ut, you know, about the establishment of the state by the Zionist entity, even though those original Zionists were not religious people in particular, they claim that they have a raya from these Arba Mitzorayim. They weren't the most religious, pious people. And yet they were the ones who brought about the Yeshua, because as a result of their going to Machta Aram, they found that the Machta was completely empty. They were able to report back to the Jewish community that the danger was lifted. Tana Rabbanan, more about what to do in cases of danger, when the Malchamoves is reigning supreme, Dever Ba'ir, there's a terrible plague in the city, Al Yahalech Adam B'emtza HaDerech. A person shouldn't walk in the middle of the road. Malchamoves, Malch B'emtza Drochim. when the Malach HaMavis looks for its victims, it goes down the middle of the road. Tikevon diyehivna le'reshusa, once the green light is given to the Malach HaMavis, mazge le'hedja. He's a big shot. He's bold and brazen. He goes right down the middle of the derech, you know, and he destroys whatever he can destroy, anything in his way. He's not embarrassed. He's not cowardly. He's bold. He's courageous. He's out there in the public eye. Shalom be'ir, when there's peace in the city, al yahalech b'tzidei drachim. Where's the Malach HaMavis when there's peace in the city? You know, he's lurking in the private shadows on the sides. Then you should avoid those places. They came into Lesley Rishusa, Mechabi Chibuye Maske. He doesn't have the green light to go ahead and destroy, so he's hiding himself. So he doesn't go back. He doesn't go back and forth in the middle of the road, but rather he lurks in the sides of the road where people are not around. So avoid the sides of the road. Now, the truth is that in certain situations, if you're afraid, for example, of animals and so forth, it's good to walk in the middle of the road. Because then, if Chas V'Shalom an animal steps out, you'll be able to see it, and you'll have more room and more of a chance to run away. However, in many cases, like for example, bike riders and so forth and so on, I would not recommend that they drive their bikes in the middle of the road. Do you agree with me? I mean, that's very dangerous.
Yeah.
Because you have traffic coming this way, traffic coming that way. Tana Rabbanan, more about this plague that's in the city, Dever Be'ir. Al Yikanes Adam Yochid Lebeis HaKnesses. A person should not enter into a synagogue during these periods of plagues alone. Yochid means alone. Why? Shemalach HaMoves Mafkid Shom Kalev. Of all places, where does the Malach HaMavis leave his utensils with which he uses to kill his victims and take their lives, and it doesn't matter whether it's by day or by night? In the synagogue. The greater the Mokom Kedusha and the sanctity of the place, the greater the opposite, you know, the Misa, in this case the Malach HaMavis. So don't enter into a shul at this period of time alone. Chances are the Malach HaMavis is lurking there inside the shul. Vahani mili hecha delo kari be dardaki velo matzli be asara. It means the shul is vacant. People have evacuated the shul. But if there are people in the shul, for example, there's a minyan going on, or the children are studying Torah in the shul, that's tashvar, then there's no danger to enter into the shul. The power of tefillah, the power of Torah, is going to reject and repel the Malach HaMavis. There's a very famous, I call it a legend, I don't know if it's historically true, about the Arizal in Tzfat. Uh-huh. You know, the Arizal died at a very young age. Some say he died as young as 33. Others say he died at 36, 37, 38. But anyway, most of the Girsos, he was in his 30s when he died. And it's mind-boggling what he accomplished in such a short lifetime. So they say that after Kol Nidre night, everybody packed out of the shul, the Ari stayed alone. And while he was learning, he noticed in the background of the shul, a very gaunt and scary looking figure, you know, shrouded in darkness, but coming out. And he recognized that that was the Malach HaMavis. And he saw that the Malach HaMavis had a long document in his hand. And he was holding it proudly. And with a cynical laugh, he was saying to the Ari, when the Ari saw, asked him, what are you doing here in Tzfat? He said, I've come to collect this, you know, anyone on this list is going to die in the year to come. And that's been decreed on Rosh Hashanah and sealed on Yom Kippur. And what do you think the Ari did? You guessed it. He started fighting with the Malach HaMavis. Just as Yaakov Avinu had wrestled with the Soro Shel Esav. And throughout the entire night, the Arizal was desperately trying to rip this list out of the hands of the Malach HaMavis. And finally, when day broke, the Malachamov saw that he couldn't defeat the Arizal, so he quickly ran out of the shul, and the Arizal said that he was able to hold on to the document. But unfortunately, the very tippy end of the document, the Malchamovis was able to wrench out, and it ripped from the document, and the Malchamovis had it in his hand. And that was, there was only one name on that document, on that little piece of document, and that was the name of the Arizal who died that year. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a Braisa, Klovim, when there are dogs in the city, Bochim, and they're crying, that means that Malchamavis Bola'ir, that's a harbinger of the presence of the Malchamavis in the city. Klovim is Sachakim. If the Klovim are having fun, you know, dogs have a tendency of being very jollicky and running around and having fun. That's an illusion, that's a symbol, She'elyo Hanavi Bola'ir. That on the contrary, it's a good symbol, it's a harbinger of happiness. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw to it that the animals would respond to various situations. The dogs would cry or laugh and play depending upon what's going on. And all this is in order to notify the people whether they're allowed to go out into the streets or they should remain within their homes. If you see the dogs are crying, then that's not a good time to go out into the city streets. The Malchamavis is lurking there in the shadows. If, on the other hand, the dogs are laughing, then it's fine to leave the confines of your house and go out into the streets. Yosef, Rav Ami, Rav Asi, Kame, de Rav Yitzchok Nafcha. Rav Ami and Rav Asi were sitting in front of the great Rebbe, Rav Yitzchok Nafcha, to learn Torah at his feet. Mar Omer Le, and one of them, we're not sure who, turned to Rabbi Yitzchak and said, Lema Mar Shmaite, please, our Rebbe, teach us a Dvar Alocha. Umar, and the other one, again, we're not sure who he was, but his buddy, said, Omale, he turns to Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka and says, Lema Mar Agadata, would the Rebbe possibly teach Agadata? And we don't know which is more important, or which should come first, Halocha or Agadata, Posach. Lemeimer Agadata, Rabbi Yitzchak began with Agadata, Velo Shavik Mar, but the other one did not allow him to continue. He insisted, he banged his hand on the table, fist on the table, and he said, no, teach us Halocha. Posach Lemeimer Shmaitetot. So Rabbi Yitzchak responded in turn, and he started teaching Halocha, Velo Shavik Mar, and the other one, sure enough, started banging on the table, he wants to hear Agadata. Omolahem, so Rabbi Yitzchak turns to Rabbi Ami and Rav Asi, and he says, "Em shalachem Moshe lamad over doma." I'm going to give you a simile so that you'll understand what's going on here. Li adam sheyesh lo shtei noshim. A man has two wives. Achas yalda, the achas zakena. One is older, and one is younger. Now he had two colored hairs in his head. He had black hairs, but they were going on him fast, and he had white hairs. So Yalda, the younger wife, Malaketis Lo Alavana, she would rip out his white hairs because she wanted him to look young. Now, it's like today they dye their hair. Zkena Malaketis Lo Shchoros, she wanted him to look older because she was getting on in years. She didn't want to have a young husband, it would be embarrassing. Is Nimtza Kereach Mikad Mikan. It's a very famous phrase, they use it here even in Israel today, that he's bald from here and here because he has no hairs left. His black hairs were removed by the older woman and his white hairs by the younger woman. He's left bald, left with nothing. And the nimshal here that Rabbi Yitzchak was trying to convey to them is, I can't teach you anything. As soon as I start teaching you halacha, he starts yelling, and I go to he starts yelling, we're left without anything. We have no Torah whatsoever. Amalahen. So therefore, they responded to the Rebbe, Rabbi Yitzchak, and they said, Ihochi, if that be the case, then Emolechu Milsa de Shavilis Ravaychu. Is it possible to ask you, Rebbe, to teach something that is a unique overlap, an integration of both Halacha and Agadata? And this is what Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha taught them. It says in the Torah, in the Parasha of Eish, Ki Seitze Eish Umitza'a Kotzim, Teitze me atzma. it sounds like the fire goes by itself. It's sort of simultaneously the fire expands. And then the Pasuk says, Shalom Yishalim Amavre Sabeiru, it implies that there was somebody who burnt the fire. It didn't come spontaneously. Says Rav Yitzchak Nafa, from this stira, from this apparent contradiction, we could derive both agada and halach at the same time. He starts by saying agadata. We're talking about, symbolically, the burning of the Beis HaMikdash. It's very good to learn this during the Bein HaMitzarim period. And even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not burning the fire, it's us, we, our sins, that are causing the fire to, in a sense, spontaneously burn. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Olai L'shalim Es HaBe'ira Shevati. Nevertheless, despite the fact that the fire was spontaneous, nevertheless, Hashem says, I'm responsible, and I have to pay damages, Kaviyochel. Amazing statement to you. Ani Tzisi Eish B'tzion. I was responsible for letting the fires burn, Yerushalayim. Shenemar, Posgin Eicha, Vayatzes Eish B'tzion V'tochel Yisoduseha. And the fire came and burnt the very foundations of Yerushalayim. Yisvani Asid Livnosa Be'eish. And in the future, at the time of the ultimate Geula, at the time of Mashiach, I will build the Beis HaMikdash, I will rebuild Tzion with fire. Shenemar, Vani Eyela Chomas Eish Saviv Ulechvod Eya Besocha. That's the Agadita. Shmaitita, what aloch do we derive from the very same Pasuk? Posach HaKosuv Benizkei Mamon. The Torah says, Ki Seitze Eish, which means Me'atzma. That means the Mavir was really not responsible here in the sense that he lit the fire in his own backyard. But he didn't watch the fire. And now the fire got out of control and it burnt his neighbor's field down. And his neighbor really suffered tremendous damage as a result of the negligence of the Baal HaEish. And all this is really, in a sense, representative of all of his mama. Any time, whether it's Eish or something else, that he has mama that could do damage, and he doesn't watch it properly, then he's chayav. Like, for example, he has a shor, which is just like an Eish. It's a dangerous, potentially dangerous mazik. He's got to provide shmira. That's nizkei b'mono. But then v'siyem b'nizkei gufa, the pasuk says, ha-mavir esabeir, as if to say that he himself lit the fire to his friend's field. And that's called Yodayim, that's called a Hezek B'Yodayim, a Hezek B'Gufo. Lomer Lecha, this is teaching us, Isho Mishum Chitzav. This reflects the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan, of Isho Mishum Chitzav, that just like if a person throws arrows and he destroys something, it's as if he destroyed it physically with his own, or directly I should say with his own hands, so too, when a person lights a fire, even though he lit the fire in his own personal property, his own backyard, nevertheless the fire, when it goes and it spreads to his friend's field, it's as if he was mazik b'yadayim, as if he physically, directly burnt down his friend's field. And that's why the Torah calls him a mavir. Ah, if this be the case, then niske eish should be classified and defined as a subcategory of odom mazik. And just like if a person himself is mazik something, he pays nezek, but he also pays tsar, ripui, shevis, uboshes, the five categories of payments. So too here, in a case where somebody was damaged, physically injured by the fire that you lit in your backyard, but you didn't watch it properly, is he going to be chayev for nezek, tsar, ripui, shevis, and boshes? If he was chayev for eish b'toris momen amazik, then he would be chayev nezek, but only nezek. The other four additional categories of payment are engendered or incurred by odom amazik, not by momen amazik. So, for example, if my shor is nogeach, a human being, I, as the baal shor, don't have to pay anything more than domov, which means nezek of the nizak, but I don't have to pay under the categories of tzar, ripui, shevis, and boshes. Mashenkin and eish, if I light a fire in my backyard and the fire spreads, and Nebuch, Rachmana Litzlan, somebody is injured by the fire, then I have to pay not only Nezek, as I would do for my Shar, but also Tzar, Ripu, Shevis, and Boshes as well, because now we activate the principle of Isho, Mishum, Chitzov. The Gemara now tells a story about David HaMelech, which is relevant to the laws of Eish, of Nizkei Eish. The Pasuk tells us in Shmuel Beis, Perek Chav Gimel, about what happened to David at the time of his wars against the Plishtim. And the Pasuk says, Vayisave David Vayomer Mi Yashkeni Mayim Mi Bor Beis Lechem Asher Bishar. And the Pasuk means that David HaMelech had a suffik in halach, he had a halachic doubt, a question. And he wanted to know, Mi Yelech, who will go, Levarer, up to Sanhedrin, raise this question, and where was the Sanhedrin sitting? They were Yoshvim Bishar Beis Lechem. And the Shita Mekubetzis claims that when the Gemara says that this Pasuk is a reference to Sanhedrin, which again, according to Pshuta Shel Mikra, it's not, that's because it doesn't make sense that when David was asking for water, if he was asking for physical water, that he would ask from Beis Lechem. You know, if he needs physical water, you know, he didn't have to go to Beis Lechem to ask. And not only that, it doesn't make sense. Why did the Tanakh have to go out of its way to tell us that he went to find Mayim in Beis Lechem? But the answer is that he asked the question, he needed a halachic response to an issue, and for that he needed to go to the Sanhedrin. So he's looking for someone to represent him and appear before the Sanhedrin who sit in the Shar Beis Lechem. And the very next pasuk says, Vayivku shloshes hagiborim b'machne plishtim, Vayishavu Mayim Mibor Beis Lechem Asher B'Shar. And then the pasuk says, Vayisu Vayaviu El David V'lo Oval Ishtosam Vayasev Osam Lashem. And the pasuk seems to indicate that the Giborim of David went to clarify this question, but David refused to accept their answer. Maiko Miboile, what was David's halachic issue? What was his question? And the Gemara suggests three different possible opinions, three different possible answers to this question. What was David HaMelech's question? What was his issue? Omar Rava, Omar Rav Nachman. The first approach is that of Rav Nachman. Tomun Be'esh Kami Boile. David HaMelech had a doubt as to whether or not we accept the Shita of the Chachamim that Tomun Be'esh is Potter, or the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda that Tomun Be'esh is Chayev. Iker Rabbi Yehuda, Iker Abonon. Now, why did David need to ask this question? What was so urgent about it? And the answer is that if you look in the parasha there, in that episode, the people of David burnt up a field, a goddish of Yisrael, of a Jew. And inside this goddish were concealed kelim. And he wanted to know, are they chayev to pay for those kelim or not? Upashtule, and the response they got from Sanhedrin on this question, my de pashtule, whatever they answered. We don't know exactly what they answered. So that's one pshat. Rav Huna Omar, Rav Huna said that David had a different suffix. What was he vacillating about? It says in the psukim, in Divrei Yomim, and I'll read the psukim, Va'plishtim nesfu sham l'melchama v'ti chelkas asod m'leya sa'orim. And we derive from this that the fields over there where David was fighting with the Plishtim were gedishim disa'orim disrael havim. These were privately owned. You know, these were Jewish possessed gedishim. Davi mitmerei plishtim behu, and the Plishtim would hide inside these goddishes, inside these bales. And now the Jewish people wanted to, in the framework of this military campaign, they wanted to burn up these Gedishim, and in so doing they would defeat their enemy, the Plishtim. Becoming boiler, but David was vacillating about Maula Hatzil Atzmo b'momen chavero. Is a person allowed to destroy someone else's property in order to save himself? And again, that itself is a very difficult question, as Tosfos here, Dira Maskel Mao, points out. Because after all, in a case of Pikuach Nefesh, you can violate any Issur in the Torah, so why can't you destroy someone's possessions? And Tosfos says that's not what he was asking. He was asking whether or not he's Chayav L'Shalim. Does he have to pay damages if he uses other people's possessions and destroys them in order to save his life? Shulchu Lei, the Sanhedrin, sent in the, with these Giborim a response to David's questions, Osur L'Hatzel Atzmo B'Momen Chavero. Meaning you will have to pay damages if you destroy someone else's, another Jew's possessions, even if you're doing it so, for the sake of Pikuach Nefesh. Aval, but the exception to that rule is Ata, you, David, Melech Ata, you're a king. And there's a special halach with regard to a king. I used to know how to say it in Latin. And that is Umelech Poreitz Lasos Lo Derech V'ein Mochim B'yodo. That if a king has to get from one place to the other, and especially within a military campaign, and he's got to break through someone's field, he's allowed to create a derech, meaning a road straight through the middle of someone's field, and ain mochim biyado, and no one's able to protest, and therefore you don't have to pay any damages if you have to burn these haystacks as a kingly order. You know, that's your special domain as a sovereign ruler, and you're allowed to do that. We get to the third possible answer. V'rabbanon v'itema rabba bar mori amru. The rabbi said that what was the nature of the question of David HaMelech? Gedishim disa'orim d'Yisrael havu. These Gedishim were not Gedishim of Plishtim, but rather they were privately owned by Jews. Gedishim of Bali. And there were other Gedishim, u'gedishim da'adoshim de'plishtim. There were gatherings of adoshim, was some sort of a lentil bean, again in its natural form, that were piled into bales, and those were owned by the plishtim v'chaboyelehu. And the question that bothered the mind of David HaMelech was the following question: Ma'u litol gedishim shel siorim di Yisrael litein lifnei behemto. Amanas l'shalem gedishim shaladoshim deplishtim. Is it permissible to confiscate those properties, the sa'orim, the gedishim of Israel, give them as food to the animals, because the animals need to eat, and that's part of a war as well. And the understanding would be that he would replace those gedishim of siorin, right, because he wants to compensate these people, by giving them the gedishim of adoshim deplishtim. It would be part of the spoils of war. And the Rush says that these adashim were not available for payment, because then for sure it would be mutter, because it would be a zchus for them to be beneficial for them to accept the adashim, but apparently, these adashim were not readily accessible. Shulchu Lei, the Sanhedrin, responded with a pasuk in Yechezkel, Chavol Yashiv Rashag Zelu Yishalim. And what does that mean? Afal Pi Shegzelu Mishalim Rashahu. When you steal something from someone, even if you have an intention to pay back, you're still a Rasha. However, in your case, that's what the Sanhedrin said, Aval ata melech ata, u'melech poreitz lasos lo derech v'ein mochim b'yodo. Notice, you could be mafkir the momo and the bailus of anyone, if necessary. You could take away their goddess shall siorin if you need to, in order to feed the animal. So the Gemara now analyzes this. Bishle melamandi omar la'achlufe, according to the third response, an explanation of Rabba Bar Mori and the Rabbanon, that he was trying to substitute, give the Adashim as payment for the Seorin. Hainu dechsiv chad kra. We understand why in one pasuk in Shmuel it says, "Vatehisham chelkas hasode malea adashim." Uksiv chad kra. There's another pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, and there it says, "Vatehi chelkas hasode malea siorim." There's an apparent contradiction between Shmuel and Divrei Hayamim. In Shmuel, it's defined or described as adashim, whereas in Divrei Hayamim, it's defined and described as Sa'orim. How do we reconcile that contradiction? And the answer is, it was both. There were Gedishim that belonged to the Israel, and those were Sa'orim, and then there were Gedishim that belonged to the Plishtim, and those were Adashim. And Rava and David HaMelech wanted to swap and substitute one for the other. El Lamanti Omer, but according to the second answer, Limikle. In other words, David was vacillating about whether he could burn the Tevua of Israel, where the Plishtim were hiding. My Ibailu Lahani Trey Kroy. Why do we need these two psukim, one in Shmuel and one in Divrei Hayamim, that described, you know, Gedishim Adoshim, Gedishim Saorim? What's that all about? Amalecha. That answer, the middle answer, could respond and defend itself and say, Dahavu namu gnami gdishim dadoshim d'Israel davi mitmer behu plishtim. That the plishtim were hiding themselves not just in gdishim of Siorin, but also in gdishim of adoshim. Again, one was where the Rashi Levite is curious to know why the Tanakh found it necessary to enter into all these, you know, nitty gritty details, you know, whether they were Adashim or Siorim, you know, like, might have to be, like, what's the difference? So I don't have an answer to that question. Bishlam, the Gemara says, Laman di Omar, according to the second opinion, Limikli, which means that Dovin wanted to know if he's allowed to burn Jewish Tavua within the context of this battle. Hainu dechsiv, I understand the pasuk in Shmuel, which says, Vatehisham chelkas hasode malei adoshim, Vaisyatzev besoch hachelka vayatzileho. In other words, they didn't give David a chance, an opportunity to burn down the tvua, the chelkas hasode. And the answer is because also lahatzil atzmo mamon chavero. Again, this is a little bit difficult because, as we said before, Tosus holds that clearly and undeniably you're allowed to destroy someone else's momon for pikuach nefesh. The whole issue is whether he has to pay back. In any event, now we understand, says the Gemara, what does it mean when it says vayisatzev besocha chelka, that they stood firm ground in the chelka in order to save it from David's burning it up? What does it mean they saved it? It wasn't a matter of saving it. After all, David HaMelech's intention in his Havmina was not to destroy it. His Havmina was to replace it and exchange it with Hadoshim. And the Gemara answers, the Lo Shavik Lahu Lachlufe. They didn't want to give David the opportunity to destroy Siorim and replace them, substitute Adashim. And that's what it means when the pasuk says Chavol Yashiv Rasha Gzeil Yishalem. The Gemara now asks the question: Bishleim Lahani Tarte. According to the second and third answers, Hainu Dechsiv Trei Kroy, we were able to justify why we had these two psukim in Shmuel and Divrei Hayomim, whether the Sada was full of Siorim, whether the Sada was full of Adashim, and this we can explain because David HaMelech was asking about the burning of these Sados. But according to the first answer, now we have a problem. And that's where the Gemara continues here on Daf Samach Aleph Amid Aleph. Ela Leman Di Omer, according to the first answer, Talmud Be'esh Kami Boili. David was vacillating about the status and the liability vis-a-vis Talmud. Is Mai Boili Kroy? Why did the Torah have to tell us in one part of Tanakh that it was Malaya Saori, another part of Tanakh was Malaya Adashim, Amalecha? This answer will defend itself by saying that Tomun that in addition to asking the question about Tamun, David HaMelech vacillated about another issue, and that's one of the other opinions, whatever issue you want to take, whether you're allowed to burn the Tefuah in order to win this battle, whether you're allowed to swap Tefuah with Adashim. Bishleim l'man yomer hani tarti. I can understand, according to two out of the three shitos, let's say the second shita, that he wanted to burn up Adashim and Siorim, or the third shita, that he wanted to be Machlif Siorim for Adashim. Hainu d'ksiv, now we understand, and it's understood, the Pasuk, V'lo Ova, David Lishtosam, David didn't want to accept the answer. Omar Kemen de'iko Yisura lo Nichali. Even though you're telling me that a melech is allowed to violate this Yisur, but I'm not comfortable with that. I don't want to violate something which, for your rank and file citizen, which would be us. So I don't want to be Nakil because, you know, I'm a king. You don't want to utilize his big, you know, his kingly rights and privileges. Simply asking a halachic question that has nothing to do with being a melech or anybody. Is michte gemara hu deshalchule milo ovel ishtosam? After all, the Sanhedrin sent him an answer. We don't know what the answer was, but why was David refusing to accept that answer? And the Gemara says, "The lo amrinu mishmayhu." Now, what's lo amrinu mishmayhu? The literal translation of those three words is lo amar alocha zu b'shem agiborim shalchu lishol es hasanhedrin. In other words, he didn't want to mention the name of the Giborim who went to ask this question. You know, normally, if you get an answer and a halachic ruling, you mention the name of the person who offered you that halachic ruling for a number of reasons. But here, David didn't want to do so. And again, not that he refused the answer and he rejected it, but he would refuse to attribute any sort of merit or express any sort of gratitude vis-a-vis these giborim who went to ask this question. Why? Omar, David said the following, Kach mekublanim vezdino shel Shmuel Ramosi, kol amoser atzmol amus al divrei Torah, ein omrim dvar halacha mishmo. A person should not expose himself to danger, even if it means that he's doing it for the sake of Torah, of Divrei Torah. And here the Giborim exposes themselves to danger during this war, to show up in the gates of Beis Lechem and ask the Sanhedrin this question. They really were exposing themselves to danger. Now, we have a principle of Shluchei Mitzvah and Yizokin, and usually when you do a Dvar Mitzvah, you're protected from Shamayim. But nevertheless, you cannot expose yourself to danger, the definite danger. That's called Shchiach Hazeka. But what confuses me here is that the implication was, if we go back to the Gemara earlier on Samach Amud Beis, the Gemara seems to indicate that David HaMelech sent these Giborim to ask the question. Let's go back and see if we can indeed find this. Here it is. Vayis'aved David v'yomer mi yashikeni yashkeni maya mibar beis lechem. Who is going to go to the Sanhedrin that is sitting at the gates of beis lechem? It sounded like David was hoping that some great courageous warriors would volunteer to represent David and go and ask this question. So David himself was encouraging them to go. Now he's not even mentioning it in their name, because what right do they have to expose themselves to danger for the sake of Divrei Torah? I don't know. The Gemara says, Vayaseich Osam Lashem Bishleim Olamadi Omer Hani Tarte Mishum diavid l'shem shemayim el leman di omar tomen ve'esh mai vayasech osam l'shem. And the Gemara answers, diamrinu mishma digemore. That takes us to the next Mishnah, which Mishnah will do tomorrow. Let's just go over this last piece of Gemara. According to the second Shita, that David was interested in knowing if he's allowed to burn the Tvua of the Adashim or the Seorim, or according to the third Shita, he wanted to know if he could swap Adashim for Seorim in a payment and a compensation, is he didn't want to rely on the Kula that he got from Sanhedrin as a Melech. He wanted to be Machmir because he felt that fundamentally he was Osur B'Dover. This means what we call not hutra, but dechuya. Dechuya means you're really violating the Isser, except you're allowed to. And all this is called by the Tanakh, Vayasech Osam Lashem, which means it's like taking water and pouring it as a libation for Hashem, Mishum Di'ovad L'Shem Shamayim. David was being super-duper machmir on himself, L'Shem Shamayim. But if we go back to the first answer that David HaMelech was asking about Talmud Be'esh, he was vacillating where the concealed things are included in the Zikin of Eish or not. Does the Mazik pay for Talmud? Is what does the pasuk mean when it says Vayasech Osam Lashem? And he poured them as a libation to God. So the Gemara says you have to interpret this liberally, not loosely, not literally. Di Amrinu Mishma de Gemara. David said this halacha in the name of the Gemara, which means bestomach. He didn't mention the name of those who transmitted this halacha, namely the Giborim. Their names were completely omitted by David. Why? Because he felt that they shouldn't have been Mosa Nefesh on this. And that's what it means when the Pasuk says, Shenischem Lashem, which means Shalom Nemru B'Shem Basar V'Dam. Just before we close, I wanted to add a pasuk in Tehillim. The pasuk is a very complicated pasuk, but in the middle of this pasuk, it says, "Asher miru bal osich nischehem." Now, what is this bal osich nischehem? And we're talking about these Giborim who exposed themselves to danger and there was no permission for them to do so. That's Bal Osich Nischehem in that Pasuk in Tehillim. Okay, Rabosai, I think that's where we're going to call it. We're going to end it here for the night. We have the Mishnah, which is the last Mishnah in the sixth Perek, is it not? Oh, I'm not sure. Let me see if there are any other Mishnahs besides this one. We still have about four Mishnahs left to finish Shakones. I don't know if we'll be able to do that tomorrow, but hopefully we'll do it in the very near future. And then we start Perek Merubah. That's the seventh Perek, one of the most profound Prokem in Shas.